ESPN Daily is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven.
Why did you feel like the Rams were the right fit for you?
You know, looking at it in the short term there, it was really exciting just based on their recent past success. You know, it had been a bunch of years in the playoffs, a bunch of years with winning records. Once the trade happened and it was decided that I was going to be there, I wanted to make sure that I was pulling my weight.
When the Los Angeles Rams traded for Matthew Stafford this offseason, they handed one of the NFL's biggest arms to one of its biggest brains, head coach Sean McVay. And while Stafford in Detroit was pretty easy to overlook on account of the general awfulness of the Lions, there is no ignoring the quarterback now. Not in Hollywood, not when nothing short of a Super Bowl, which will be hosted in LA this postseason, would disappoint. Today, Seth Wickersham takes us behind the scenes of how the Stafford trade went down, what it all says about quarterbacks in the modern era, and how Cabo, apparently, is the nexus of power in the NFL. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, August 25th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Seth, I've summoned you here today because you've written this cover story on Matthew Stafford, who I have now learned likes to be called Matthew and not Matt, a mistake I've been making for years and years now. And it got me to thinking that I really don't understand anything, actually, about Matthew Stafford or his interior monologue, what he's actually like, but you do, because you spent all this time with him and his wife and his new coach, Sean McVay. What did you learn about who Matthew Stafford is as he prepares to take over this franchise as the new star in LA?
I think that Matthew Stafford is, in a lot of ways, the most famous, least known quarterback in the NFL.
Seth Wickersham has covered the NFL for ESPN for 20 years.
And he's kind of been in this irrelevant franchise his entire career. You know, the only way it could have been worse if he had like been drafted by the Jets. And I think there's a lot of football fans who have never seen Matthew Stafford in his 12 years in the NFL play a complete game.
No.
Not because of injuries, even though he has had his share, but because he plays in a franchise that is never on primetime television except for Thanksgiving. And at one point I asked him, what do you want out of the rest of your career? And I found his answer to be very earnest and humbling.
I just want to be successful. You know, those teams you really remember, those teams that have success, you get to make runs and you know, whether it's playoff runs, Super Bowl runs, all that. But I play this game to try and win Super Bowls. And that's what I want to do. I would love to have the opportunity to play in that game as many times as I possibly can from here on out.
You know, you think about all of the quarterbacks who have authored their legends in the 12 years since Matthew Stafford has been in the NFL with these big playoff moments. And he has none of them. He doesn't have a signature play. And I think that he's very aware where he is in his career. And it's one of the reasons why he wanted out of Detroit.
Yeah, you ask him at one point in this piece, Seth, you talk to him and McVay about the sheer number of primetime games that are gonna be on television for the Rams. It reminds me about something that I don't really ever think about either, which is that time slot for NFL teams. Not all of these things are created equal, and the Rams are gonna be very much in the spotlight this season.
They're not only gonna be in the spotlight, but they're going to be under pressure because Matthew Stafford went to the Los Angeles Rams, engineered a trade there for one reason, and that's to play in a Super Bowl. And Sean McVay wagered his coaching career on another quarterback, the second time in a couple years now, for the chance to win a Super Bowl. And so they're not only going to be on prime time, they're going to be expected to perform on prime time.
Yeah, in your piece, Seth, you walk down this metaphorical memory lane with Matthew Stafford, and it's a ballroom in suburban Los Angeles. He's doing the thing that all like famous quarterbacks do at some point, where he signs like a million pieces of memorabilia. And you realize that this is him walking you through his football life. What was walking down that memory lane like?
It was really interesting. So I got to this hotel north of Los Angeles, and I walk into this ballroom, and there are just rows and rows and rows of memorabilia. And I walk up to Stafford, and as I got to him, he was signing University of Georgia memorabilia. We got to talk about his time in Georgia, where he started for 3 years and left Georgia kind of known as a winner, someone who had performed well in bowl games. And then he goes first overall to the Lions. They were the first winless team in the modern NFL history. They were an 0-16 team.
Right.
You know, he got to Detroit when the city was at its lowest in 2009 during the Great Recession. And I think that he took a lot of pride in his dream of delivering that franchise a Super Bowl. He showed some promise as a rookie, had a great, one of the most memorable games ever on NFL films, where he blew out his shoulder and threw his fifth and game-winning touchdown pass as time expired.
Stafford takes the snap. This is going to be it. Stafford looking for somewhere to go. Sets and throws. End zone. Watch out. He touched it. That's got to be a flag. It's going to be first and goal, Lions. And Matthew Stafford is down on the field and is not getting up.
I just remember laying on the ground and hearing the timeout called, and for some reason in my head that clicked that I had a chance to come back in the game.
Stafford, last play of the game, takes the snap, rolls, throws, end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. What a finish.
You know, it was the kind of moment that showed promise, that showed that he was not only going to deliver as a number one pick, but that he was a special number one pick. And he ended up leading the Lions to 3 playoff games, didn't win any of them, but they were kind of spread out and sprinkled throughout his career. And I don't think the Lions were ever able to get anything going.
Yeah, well, hold on a second here, because the Lions, Seth, they've never made a Super Bowl ever. So it's not entirely Matthew Stafford's fault, it's safe to say, on that front. But the thing about Matthew Stafford that makes people think that he can be this savior-type figure, let's be very honest about it, is his arm.
Stafford wants it all. Got it. Touchdown! What a beautiful throw by Stafford.
How would you describe his arm and what makes that thing special?
You know, I think that everything that Patrick Mahomes gets celebrated for now, throwing from off platform, the indifference to stepping into passes, shifting his arm to different angles depending on what windows are open, Matthew Stafford has been doing for 12 years. And a lot of people just don't notice it because
we didn't see it. We didn't see it in that way, Seth. Not that often, no.
Matthew Stafford is the type of wondrous arm that's allowed him to problem solve at a high level. That's a gift that's exclusive to the great arms. The ball just looks differently coming out of their hand. And that's the type of thing that Matthew Stafford has had his entire career. He's always had that blessed arm.
And the Lions, Seth, I mean, they were blessed to have that arm for as long as they did. I mean, this is the franchise that is most famous for the early retirements of its superstars, right? I mean, this is Barry Sanders retiring famously early, Calvin Johnson going to do the same. And Stafford, I think, was the guy they hoped would survive the whole Lions experience. But he's also the guy who was this quintessential winner at Georgia, as you say. So him becoming the face of a quintessential loser, what was that adjustment like for him?
I think it was horrible. One of the things we discussed was, you know, the mental gymnastics required to manufacture hope. And it was really kind of fascinating. Like, Kelly Stafford at one point told me...
His wife Kelly told me
that it's not just at the beginning of each season. It sometimes can be getting you through the week, getting you through the press conference, when you simply aren't sure that you guys, you know, have the horses to compete in the NFL.
He would have to be the guy who was always positive, always trying to keep guys, all right, we can do this, let's go. And I could imagine after continuing not to, you know, win those games, that gets hard and that gets repetitive.
Matthew just talked about, you know, blocking out the expectations, blocking out the coaches, blocking out any problems, and thinking about his teammates and the people in the huddle with him and how they're counting on him to perform and how he didn't want to let them down. Before each season, he would get to a place where he'd have her convinced that they were going to go to the Super Bowl.
Oh, no.
And he really believed it.
Oh, he expected to win it every season. You think, like, after years and years of literally putting everything on the line and not accomplishing what you want, that mentality would change, but it never did. It really didn't.
I asked him, you know, what's it like to be at home and watch the playoffs and watch these other quarterbacks author their own legends? Do you watch it? And he said, yeah, I do watch it. And it was horrible. And he's acutely aware of the perception of his career. And that's of someone who puts up a ton of yards, throws for a lot of touchdowns, occasionally commits the momentum-altering turnover, but more than anything, isn't there playing in late January and early February, as we've become accustomed to watching the great quarterbacks do.
And so with apologies, due apologies to Bobby Lane, I suppose, Stafford is arguably the greatest quarterback the Lions have ever had, right, Seth? I mean, he leads the franchise in wins, in touchdown passes, in passing yards. Those are seemingly reasons why Sean McVay might be hopeful he'd do better under his system. What has McVay been seeing in Matthew Stafford?
Well, I think that Sean McVay is a very ambitious coach. That's no surprise. And he's accomplished a lot for what he's done in his coaching career. But I think that one of the themes of the offseason that we've seen with Matthew Stafford, with the 49ers trading up to draft Trey Lance, is the limits of what you can do with a very good quarterback versus a transcendent one. And I think that towards the end of last season, obviously there were some problems between the coaching staff and Jared Goff. That's been well documented. And it left McVay open to the idea of an upgrade.
And Seth, just to clarify what that was about, it was this idea that Sean McVay is the boy genius coach, right? Like one of the offensive wizards of the modern NFL. And he had this toy, it almost sounded like sometimes, in Jared Goff, his guy that he could control to do whatever he wanted. And then in the last couple seasons in LA, that toy just seemed to break.
It's a thin line. I mean, Jared Goff did not play well in that Super Bowl against New England. And still, he threw a pass down the sideline midway through the fourth quarter to Brandon Cooks that Cooks should have caught.
Pass, caught, no! In and out of the hands of Cooks, it would have been a touchdown.
If Cooks had come down with that pass, or if they had called pass interference on it, which they could have done also, the Rams tie the game, and who knows how the game ends. Instead, Jared Goff threw the same pass on the next play, and it was intercepted. I think that smart defensive coordinators around the NFL realized that Jared Goff was a good player, but he didn't quite read defenses as well as the best quarterbacks in the NFL did, and that Sean McVay called plays designed to read the defense for him.
Mm.
And there are limits to how successful you can be in a quarterback's game when that's your best chance. And I think that one of the themes I get into with the story that I spoke about with Coach McVay is, you know, what can a truly great quarterback do? I think that when Matthew Stafford was drafted by Detroit, people thought he is the guy who is going to lead us to the promised land. He's going to take us to a Super Bowl. And as it turns out in Detroit, he learned the limits of what his ability could transcend. And now in Los Angeles, they're counting on those abilities to push them over the top and win a Super Bowl.
All right, coming up, how a vacation the Staffords took after the 2020 season wound up changing the trajectory of Matthew Stafford's entire career.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So the 2020 season has come to an end for Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions, and now he's considering seriously getting out of there. How did that day unfold?
So the Lions season ended with a loss to the Vikings that was similar to many losses during Matthew Stafford's career, in which he both played well, throwing three touchdowns, and came up just short.
Stafford throws, incomplete. Vikings finish with a win, their seventh consecutive win over the Detroit Lions.
You know, he misfired on a two-point conversion that would have tied the game. After the game, he decided that he wanted out, and he told Kelly that he wanted out, and then he was going to ask the Lions for a trade. But the next morning, he was already going back on it. Kelly walked into the kitchen, and he was emptying the dishwasher, and he was very quiet.
We had talked about it the night before, but we weren't 100% sure. And he was pretty quiet. And for Matthew, you can tell his overall mood when he's just not saying much, even around.
And he was having this entire conversation with himself where he was reconsidering, maybe deciding that he could, you know, gut through another year. But when he left that morning to go back to the facility, he asked Kelly to say a little prayer for him.
He was just kind of silent. And right before he left, he was like, all right, well, you know, wish me luck, say a prayer for me.
And he met with the Lions brass for many hours. He cried during that meeting.
You know, I wanted to make sure that whatever happened to me, the Lions got something in return for it as well. I wanted the best for both of us. And I felt at that point, the best thing for both of us was to seek a trade and try to get as much as they could for me and send me to a place that I, you know, could hopefully succeed in. You know,
and he came home knowing that he was entering his final couple weeks as a Detroit Lion, and he was nervous about it. And after a couple weeks, Kelly just said, look, we got to get out of here.
I told Matthew, he was stressing out. Obviously, there was a lot of stuff going on at this point. And I told him, we need to get away. We need to get away. We need to get out of the country. I don't care where. Away from football.
So they ended up going to Cabo. And usually what happens in Cabo stays in Cabo. But as I've learned in talking with Stafford and with Sean McVay, they cannot stop talking about what happened in Cabo.
Yeah, the Cabo thing, Seth, is this locus of really NFL power, as it turned out, over this offseason, because there is Matthew Stafford, there is Rams offensive tackle Andrew Whitworth, a friend of Matthew's, who's also on vacation there, coincidentally, and then there also is Sean McVay, just randomly vacationing. I mean, Seth, it all feels like skullduggery, I'll be honest with you here. It all feels like this could not have possibly been accidental, but pull back the veil for us on this vacation. What was happening? How do you see that?
It was accidental. And, you know, Drew Brees was down there too. Kyle Shanahan was down there too, thinking that he might get involved in the Matthew Stafford sweepstakes.
Wait. So Cabo is just a place where NFL players sort of know to gather and possibly make moves happen.
I've always thought that you get the best NFL gossip from being at the bar at the combine late or being at the hotel bar during NFL owners meetings.
Yep.
I am going to ask our bosses to send me to Cabo for 2 weeks, and I'm just going to go to the pool and see who rolls up.
You know what? Of all the expense report schemes I've heard throughout the years, that might be the greatest now.
You know, but Matthew landed there. And he texted his friend Andrew Whitworth, who also just happens to be the Rams' offensive tackle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we landed, got to the hotel, and I told him we were staying at the place we were staying at, and if he was anywhere close, we could try and hook up and play some golf. I think he texted me back like, yeah, I'm at the pool.
Andrew Whitworth texts Sean McVay to tell him that Matthew Stafford's there. And Matthew Stafford's been in Cabo less than an hour. They all congregate at the pool, and magic happens.
Sean was sitting not too far over there, probably watching tape or something on his phone, but he was close by. Just
Stafford and Sean McVay just start talking intensely. And Kelly Stafford didn't even realize that that was Sean McVay. She just thought that he looked so young that he must have just been a friend of Andrew Whitworth's.
I mean, I knew of Sean. I didn't really know what he looked like at this point. I was talking to his fiance. I was like, so how do you guys know each other? And she was like, oh, well, my fiance coaches Andrew. I was like, oh.
Wait, so they all are hanging out here around this pool. How quickly does it take for this trade to get orchestrated?
Well, so McVay had heard that Stafford wanted out, and it was very quiet. And one of the things that Matthew Stafford wanted, he didn't want to play the leak game with the Lions. And so they both promised to keep this thing under the radar. The 49ers knew that Stafford wanted out. McVay had heard that Stafford wanted out and had actually watched cut-ups of him on his phone before this. And they get to talking, and McVay brings up this game from 2016. It was week 7. Sean McVay is the precocious, he's always precocious, but he was especially precocious offensive coordinator for Washington, and they're playing the Lions. And Kirk Cousins had scored a touchdown with a little over a minute left to put Washington up ahead.
He keeps it. Cousins running to the end zone, touchdown! Kirk Cousins does it with his feet!
Matthew Stafford gets the ball with 75 yards to go, and McVay brings this game up to him. And at the pool, with a couple cocktails in Matthew, Matthew goes into detail about what happened on the ensuing drive.
Then we came out, I threw a dagger to Marvin.
Here is Stafford. They do have three timeouts remaining. Throws over the middle, completes the pass to Marvin Jones.
Threw it to him, sidearm. He caught it, had a big play. I ran on the two plays later, maybe.
Stafford stepping up. Stafford's going to run. He's got the first down.
Got us about 10 or 15. Great catch on a basic from Andre Roberts. It was a huge play that nobody really talks about.
Stafford over the middle. Caught. Andre Roberts inside the 20, down to the 18.
And then I hit Anquan in the seam and three buzz to win it.
Stafford completes to Bolden to the end zone. Touchdown! Anquan Bolden!
And Sean McVay, in addition to having his heart broken by having to relive this, as he later told me, was absolutely blown away at Stafford's recall.
He could remember every play of that drive to go win the game. And, you know, you can see he's got a photographic memory from all the experiences. And usually when you're around these players, you know, whether it's Matthew and even just talking to Breeze a little bit when we were in Cabo, those guys, they remember these plays. It's like an inventory where they just store it in their vault.
I think that what Sean McVay wanted in his next quarterback was someone who he could look at as a partner who could use all of that experience to help take pressure off of Sean McVay and the play calls. Mm. There are some quarterbacks who simply have an innate creativity, and you can call the perfect play, but that doesn't mean that that play is going to be executed well. And one of the dirty little secrets that quarterbacks will only tell you off the record is the number of catastrophes that they have to manage for on any given play. Getting the snap, diagnosing the defense, and throwing the ball accurately to the open receiver, the stuff that we laud them for, that's the bare minimum of the play. They have to know in their head what offensive tackle or lineman can't block his man, what running back may run the wrong route, which receiver can't get open against a certain cornerback. And you have to do all of these things to manipulate the defense and account for all of these problems to find a way for the play to succeed. That's what Sean McVay was looking for in a quarterback.
There's so many things that you look at with the quarterback position, but, you know, your decision-making, your timing, your accuracy, the rhythm, your ability when things do break down off schedule, what does it look like having the ability to create on your own? And, you know, he was checking the boxes in a big way.
And that's one of the things he was most impressed with Matthew Stafford, is that Matthew Stafford is certainly no stranger to disaster. And he watched him succeed time and time again in those moments that, you know, the game is kind of out of a coach's hands.
Well, Seth, we don't think of him as the type of quarterback that Sean McVay would look at and say to himself, oh, thank God, I don't have to read defenses for him in the way that he had to do for, say, Jared Goff.
But the coaches knew that he was the type of player who could do that, even if fans didn't. And I think that's one of the most interesting things about this. Once Matthew Stafford made it known that he wanted out of Detroit and word got around the league, there was a lot of teams that were involved. The Carolina Panthers actually offered the best deal, but he didn't want to go there. And he didn't have a no-trade clause in his contract. If the Lions wanted to send him to Carolina, they could have. His preferences were, in order, the Los Angeles Rams, the San Francisco 49ers, who were so heartbroken by not getting Matthew Stafford that I think that that's one of the reasons why they ended up trading up to draft Trey Lance, and the Indianapolis Colts. But the Rams were by far the leader in the clubhouse. And, you know, I think the organization did him a real solid by trading him there.
Yeah. So this meeting in which they're vibing out over this game that was a failure for McVay, a win for Stafford. And by the way, because you mentioned it, it does seem like somewhere in the distance, I'm now imagining Kirk Cousins also heartbroken, just like for many reasons from the pool, maybe on the other side of the beach. But that meeting pushes this deal forward. How fast did things pick up after that?
It picked up really fast. It picked up really fast to the point that, you know, even Sean McVay now has a hard time believing how fast it came together. When he learned that Matthew Stafford was in Cabo with him, he texted Rams executives, "You're not going to effing believe this, but Matthew Stafford is here." So after that meeting, he goes back to his phone. He's watching more cut-ups on Matthew Stafford, testing the patience of Veronica, his fiance, or perhaps investing in their mutual happiness, one could consider it. And he wants Matthew Stafford. And he gets on the phone with the owner, Stan Kroenke, the same owner who paid Jared Goff a ton of money.
Right.
Only a couple years earlier, and explains why Matthew Stafford is the guy that Sean thinks will lead them to a Super Bowl.
I was just explaining, you know, why I felt like he would be a good fit. Talked to him a little bit about the time that we had spent together, and, you know, that trust that Mr. Kroenke makes you feel is a big reason why, you know, feeling believed in, feeling supportive is why you want to do everything in your power to make him right on some of the belief that he's shown.
And, you know, Matthew Stafford was at dinner with some friends, and his phone rang.
We were at dinner and Matthew got a call, got up. I didn't even realize he left the table. Again, we were there with a bunch of friends. So just talking to them, and he came over and he was like, "Well, I guess I'm a Ram."
And the night after that, the Staffords got together with the McVays and they toasted to their joint future. And as Sean later told me, things got pretty hazy after that.
It was, you know, congratulations to the new Ram. Looking forward to a lot of fun and let's enjoy this night. And then there was a lot of phone calls and texts and different things like that, some of which are very clear, others that got a little bit hazier the later in the night.
I mean, you've described so many of these behind the scenes intimate details through your reporting that almost mask the fact that Matthew Stafford, when you confront him directly about the nuances, the details of the craft of quarterbacking, which you as a reporter know as well as anybody, he is not helpful to you, right? Like, how would you describe his wariness? How would you describe how that personality, honestly, might mesh with the setting of one of the largest media markets in the league with paparazzi and media members crawling, hoping for details all the time?
Yeah, it was annoying, to be honest with you. You know, people close to Matthew had been like, you know, he's so much more of a thinker and a transition, and he knows so much more about the craft than anybody ever asks him about. So I get there, and I'm asking him about the craft. I'm asking him about his thinking. I'm trying to get a window into his inner Peyton Manning, and he will just not go there. He can see the irritation on my face and was kind of sorry, but really not sorry. He would go off the record, though, and describe challenges for him or things that he was seeing or things that he was struggling with that he didn't want out there. And it kind of hit me that, you know, I don't think that Matthew was trying to be difficult. I don't think that he needed a drink in him, as, you know, someone close to him said, you know, might want to get a couple drinks in him and then interview him.
Honestly, a great journalistic approach in pretty much every scenario.
Exactly. I think that he's got a lot of expectations on his shoulders and he hasn't done it. Let's face it. I mean, as great as he has been at times, it's debatable whether he's truly a top five quarterback.
Right.
And I think that he wants to be tested on the biggest stage and prove to himself that he can do it in those moments. And in the context of that, I totally understood why he was reticent to give specifics to a lot of questions, because, you know, that stuff matters. I mean, Peyton Manning would get mad at his receivers for sharing details of audibles years after he had used them in a game. We can't, even though we try, we still don't know the levels of competitiveness in this league. It is a cutthroat league, and it is a league in which there are no excuses. And I think that Matthew Stafford finally got everything that he wants, but they still have to do it. And I think that that's one of the reasons why, you know, he was reticent to go into those details.
So that fear, Seth, the fear that Matthew Stafford has that leads him to want to preserve every minuscule edge from a reporter, what does that suggest to you about what we'll be watching in LA when he gets under center in the biggest opportunity of his life?
Well, we don't know, right? But the stakes are big. In June, I was at this event at SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, which is going to be the site of the Super Bowl in February. And, you know, the Rams and Rams fans kind of have this idea of, hey, we're going to be this year's Bucks, right? We're going to import a new quarterback and we're going to play the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl in our home stadium. And Stafford and Sean McVay were there as part of this event. And Kevin Frazier, the broadcaster, brought them on stage. And at one point, Frazier said to them, he said, bring us the rings, man. We expect them. And it was interesting because McVay and Stafford, both sitting next to each other, kind of smiled and looked down and then looked back up. But neither really said anything. And there is nothing to say. There's only the season ahead. And that's the thing that I think they both internalize and know more than anything. You can import a flashy quarterback. You can pair him with this generational offensive mind. But Super Bowls are not won in June. They're not won in August. They're won over the course of a season, and the answer will unfold this fall.
Seth Wickersham, our quarterbacks expert, our new Cabo San Lucas correspondent, thank you for joining us on ESPN Daily.
Thanks, man. I'll call you from the pool.
Please do. And up next, the creepiest college mascot in America might be exactly who you think.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. Purdue Pete was declared the creepiest college mascot in America this week, according to a survey of roughly 1,300 people conducted by a company called Quality Logo Products. And if you've never encountered Purdue Pete before, Purdue Pete, the mascot for the Purdue Boilermakers, I just want you to close your eyes with me here for a second. And just imagine. Because it's not just that Purdue Pete is a normal human body, but with a ridiculously oversized head that looks like if Woody from Toy Story wore a black construction helmet instead of a cowboy hat and carried around an actual sledgehammer. It's that Purdue Pete has, judging by his expression, just caught you doing something that he clearly thinks you shouldn't be. His eyebrows are bent upwards in extreme judgment. His eyes themselves are these enormous swimming pools with the pupils intensely and probably dangerously dilated. And it all suggests that Purdue Pete is taken aback, frankly, at the sheer sight of you. He's scandalized by you. And actually, in this encounter, he thinks you're the freak. But Purdue Pete's mouth, that thing tells a different story. His mouth is kind of faintly smiling, like he's the Mona Lisa of West Lafayette, Indiana, with his lips closed, but still conspicuously unstressed. Like, this is not a grimace he's wearing, it is not a frown. His massive jaw, and it is gigantic, it's kind of loose. His giant chin cleft, pretty tellingly, it's definitely unclenched. And so if you look closer, in fact, it honestly looks like Purdue Pete has seen this before. Now, Purdue Pete might not want to admit that. Purdue Pete might want to act like he's shocked and all scandalized, his eyebrows raised and everything, but don't let those pupils fool you. Purdue Pete, he has seen some things, done some things, and now he's here. The creepiest college mascot in America. So you might as well open your eyes at this point. Because what Purdue Pete has really wanted to see this entire time is you. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.